Welcome into the KS Arto Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, and we're pleased to welcome Jason Wilson to the KS Arto Good Food Hour. He's written the book, The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard. And I'm just going to read verbatim from the jacket. Is that okay?
That sounds great.
Okay. Jason Wilson is an award-winning journalist and the author of Booze Hound, On the Trail of the Rare, the Obscure, and the Overrated in Spirits, and Godforsaken Grapes, a slightly tipsy journey through the world of strange, obscure, and underappreciated wine. The series editor for Best American Travel Writing since its inception in 2000. And Jason has also written for The Washington Post, The New York Times, The New Yorker, and many others. But what a departure here into the world of cider.
Well, yes. maybe not so much, huh? Because there's an alcoholic bent that runs through your work.
I don't know if it's alcoholic, but boozy for sure. Boozy. So.
And we should also add the title of certified pommelier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, among some my... Among
sounds,
my
it sounds pretentious, but yeah, totally there is pretentious. Something behind it. Tell us how you got that title.
So, all right, so pommelier. Well, first of all, you asked me how we got into cider.
Yeah,
right? So
yeah.
I think I've always been writing about, I don't know, beverages that maybe aren't as popular as they should be, or once were popular and aren't popular anymore. So you have obscure spirits, obscure wines, and so I thought, let's get really obscure and go into cider, like heritage cider here. And so I kind of threw myself into this world. I spent really intense 18 months or so in this world. And they started a certification program, sort of like this, you know, Master Sommelier program. And I have passed my first level, and I am on my way to becoming a pommelier.
So what do you get when you pass the first level?
I think I got a patch that you might, like you would have in the 80s, like put it on your jean jacket or something, right?
Yeah, that's great.
But it does show us a certain understanding and groundwork to evaluate ciders.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I don't want to overstate it. I think the exam was done online. I think I finished it in 39 and a half minutes.
Okay.
And, yeah.
But
I think I took a work phone call in the middle of it, so it wasn't that taxing.
It's not as rigorous then as becoming a certified
no,
master
of course
of
not.
Wine
not yet, but, yeah. but we are getting the second level and third level, and I think there will be some equivalency. Yeah.
So, you know, all through the book, there are these, well, it's really kind of a parallel world to the world of wine.
Absolutely. And I think that's what gets lost with when we talk about cider, because a lot of people sort of see cider as an adjunct to beer, like craft beer, you know, and I think a lot of the cider we know comes out of that world. But I mean, cider is really more akin to wine. I mean, the apples, you know, the varieties of apples are very important, just like the varieties of grapes are important. And so a lot of the cider we have, these kind of mass market ciders, it's like making wine with Concord grapes or something, you know, some kind of basic. And I think the people that I profile in this book are people that are paying attention to and growing and foraging and getting their hands on these great cider varieties that make good cider.
I love your term, feral apples. I'm looking for feral apples, which was great.
And in the first chapter, you say you don't really like the term hard cider.
No, and I know that it's sort of a necessary one. I mean, people ask me, oh, what's your next book about cider? And they're like, well, hard cider? Do you mean hard cider? Yeah. I mean, cider is cider. It should be called soft cider, the stuff that's non-alcoholic, because, I mean, cider, the alcoholic beverage, is the historic beverage, but I mean, that's what we have. We don't have hard wine and soft grape juice.
Right. Yeah. So what took it so long to kind of... Because it's, at least in our part of the world here, cider's very important. You know, people, there are more cider makers every day, and there's some really delicious things that are produced locally. It was popular before Prohibition. Is that correct?
I think the Prohibition thing is slightly overstated. Uh-huh. I think it was more popular maybe in the around the time of the Civil War, the mid-19th century. It probably was beginning to tail off by the early 20th century anyway. What happened during Prohibition, though, is that these farmers couldn't sell their the orchardists couldn't sell their cider apples anymore. And so what was the point? So a lot of these – there's a lot of stories, kind of apocryphal stories of prohibitionists going and chopping down orchards and, you know, like Cary Nation coming in and like chopping down orchards. But that didn't really – it might have happened once in a while. But most of it was just like, we can't sell these apples anymore. We need to chop down these trees and plant culinary apples that we can sell. Mm. And so I think we went away. But cider was dying long before then, because you have Thoreau, one of the last essays he published in the Atlantic in the 1860s, I think it was even published after his death, was called Wild Apples. And in this, he was sort of wistfully bemoaning the fact that, you know, people didn't, you couldn't really find the wild apples that he had, you know, that they had made cider with in his youth. And he used to love walking in the woods and, you know, finding these really unnamed apple varieties and, you know, apples in the woods. And he, you know, he was really wistful that this was, that America was losing something. That
I didn't realize this. You include in the beginning of the book this statistic that there are 1,400 wine grapes, but there are more than 7,500 apple varieties.
Known apple varieties. Yeah. I mean, so, there's certainly apple varieties that are, you know, out in the national parks and wildernesses and whatever, you know, all over that we don't even know. There's no name for them. They're just wild apples because, I mean, every apple seed that's planted is going to be a different apple.
Yeah.
You used the word wistful just now, which harkens back to a different time. Would you turn to page 8 in the book and read the second to last paragraph? I thought that encapsulated so much.
Page 8, okay. Cider comes from places where possibly your relatives live, or from the hometown of a friend, or might be where you once went to summer camp or drove through on a family car trip. Or perhaps you've picked fruit at a U-Pick orchard, or bobbed for apples at Halloween, or eaten a candied one on a stick. I think people, at least here, understand apples in a way we don't understand grapes.
And that quote was from Stephen Pucci.
Yeah, Dan Pucci, right?
Dan
Pucci.
Yeah. And who was Dan Pucci?
He's a great cider expert. I mean, he's sort of the pommelier, if you will. You know, he's the guy. He was an actual sommelier, but he kind of dove headfirst into a cider a few years back. He had been a sommelier at some of Mario Batali's restaurants and stuff. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
One of the things you introduce in the beginning of this, and it kind of shows up all through the book, is the whole idea of terroir. And it's kind of controversial among cider makers, I guess. But but is there a difference?
Because it's not controversial among winemakers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I think they accept it more. Yeah.
Well, they push it more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is a cider apple? You make the distinction between cider apples and dessert apples.
Right. I mean, cider apples is sort of an all-encompassing thing. You have sort of bitter sharps and bitter sweets. So they're really either very high acid or they're very high in tannins. I mean, there's a sort of a bitterness or tannic quality to them. You know, so you need both, I think, in the blend for really good balanced structure. And then also you have crab apples, which really usually have pretty high acidity and a very kind of unique texture. And then there's just a whole unexplored universe of wild apple, like really wild apples that people are getting. And I mean, you have to understand these apples, a lot of them, they're just like the size of little brown golf balls. And they're just nothing like, you wouldn't eat them. If you would take one bite of them and you would spit them out.
Well, one of the things that I guess I knew, but you reminded me of, is that you can't take an apple seed and plant it and get the same apple.
That's right. Exactly. And that's the amazing diversity of apple growing, because, you can only plant an orchard by grafting. Mm-hmm. So if there's an apple you like on this apple tree, you have to take a cutting and graft it and grow the tree. But if you plant 5 apple seeds from the same apple, they're going to get 5 different apples. It's just like human beings, you know. And so that's what makes it amazing. I mean, you have a lot of especially up in New York State and some other areas in Vermont, you have people going out and finding these wild apples that they like, taking a cutting and then grafting these basically brand new varieties. Mm. This is just like out in nature, right? This is an apple that maybe years ago some cow ate and, you know, pooped it out. And the tree grew and it's been there 50 years. Well, and they take the apple. I
mean, one of the terms you used, I think maybe it was in your test, I'm not sure, but is that most of these apples are spitters.
Absolutely. That's the cider apple, the spitter. You're not going to eat this. I mean, you're not going to put this in your kid's lunchbox.
Well, let's take a break. And you've used terms that describe many of the profiles, the people you talk with: wild, gnarly, ruffled, unwieldy. A lot of the people you interview are exactly that. They'd probably rather you just kind of go away and don't bother them and let them make cider, which is wonderful that you pursue these people. There's the sommeliers, the former brewmasters that turned to cider. There's the Cornell-educated agriculturalists who have doctorals. They've been drawn to cider. And we want to make sure the listener knows that this is not a how-to book. Like, it's not going to show you how to make cider. You profile, I think, the most interesting people in the world of cider in America right now. It's really compelling. We'll be back after this break. Jason Wilson's in the KS Arto Kitchen, his new book, The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Uniworld, the world's best and most awarded luxury river cruise line, is the number one choice of travelers who dream of experiencing legendary rivers in all-inclusive luxury. All-inclusive means unlimited choice of premium spirits and wines, including regional wines, farm-to-table cuisine, excursions, wellness experiences, all airport transfers, all gratuities, and if you book a suite, you have an in-suite butler. Now through October 31st, get free air with select 2020 voyages, including Castles on the Rhine, Holland and Belgium at Tulip Time, and Paris and Normandy. Save up to 10% on 2020 itineraries with early booking. These never go on sale. Call the Uniworld specialist at TravelWise and get an additional $200 per person shipboard credit because they are the only virtuoso travel agents in Sonoma County. 707-935-WISE. That's WISE with a Z. Online at TravelWise.net.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. Folks, I've been helping people obtain the right financing for nearly two decades. This experience has helped hundreds of homeowners get through some challenging situations. Maybe you're a property investor, or how about a first-time home buyer? Divorces are very complicated, and you need my experience to understand what your mortgage options are. Inherited property or rent-to-own agreements are also my specialty. Financing a home is a huge transaction in your life. When combined with a challenging situation, you need the advice and confidence to do it right. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgeadair.com. That's georgeadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and George Adair, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Comcast Internet Essentials helps millions of people, like these students, get the internet they need to be ready for anything.
Like getting all A's.
And going to the top of my class.
I'm ready to be the first in my family to graduate college.
To start my own business.
Because I'm not just getting ready for school.
I'm getting ready for anything.
Through Internet Essentials, Comcast has connected more than 8 million people from low-income households to low-cost, high-speed internet at home. So they're ready for anything. Learn more at comcastcorporation.com/internetessentials.
We went on the street to find out what you love about MySonomaDeals.com.
I always take advantage of the hotel deals.
Oh, the restaurants for sure.
Believe it or not, you can save 50% and more at MySonomaDeals.com.
I take advantage of the golf deal.
Visit MySonomaDeals.com often for the best deals in Sonoma County. They're always changing and in limited quantities.
We love the family options.
You'll find savings and fun all wrapped into one at MySonomaDeals.com.
I had no idea.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KS Arto Cidery today, it's Jason Wilson, the author of The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard. 12 chapters in this just-released book that I think it will change your attitude about cider. Because you pointed out, many people's the first taste of cider is in some brew pub and they have something on tap and they taste it and go, oh my gosh. And they're turned off for the entire category of cider. It's a real disservice how people are introduced to cider.
Or that it's too sweet.
Yes,
you know,
or too, both, right? Or,
yeah.
Or too sour or too something, and they never give it another shot.
Right.
So tell us about this woman that you dubbed the Robert Mondavi of cider making. Autumn, is it Stoschek?
Yeah. So Autumn, right, which is a perfect name for, you know, the cider maker, let's be honest. So her cidery, Eve's Cidery, and yes, I guess she's kind of a main character in the book, and I would say, you know, she's been doing this for about 20 years now, one of the first, super committed to growing apples the right way, growing the right kinds of apples, you know, certainly committed to certain orchard sites, almost, you know, she has like single orchard sites, like single vineyard sites, and just really committed to the kind of being the opposite of what you would call these mass market ciders that everybody knows. I mean, we can name them. It's like it's Angry Orchard and Woodchuck and everything. And so, I mean, to me, Autumn and Eve's Cidery is one of the sort of the antithesis of that.
Angry Orchard is probably the one brand that most people might be familiar with. It's the largest. It owns, what, 75% of the cider market?
Something like that. Something like that. Yeah.
You visit Angry Orchard.
Yeah, of course.
Talk to the owner. And in that same chapter, you also visit the cider maker for Aaron Burr Cidery, which is another world completely. Talk about those two experiences.
Well, so right. I think that the 22 miles between where Angry Orchard has its cider house in Walden, New York, and in Wurzburgo, which is right down the road, is like that's like the philosophical schism in the world of cider, pretty much, you know. And so at Angry Orchard, the cider maker there is very good. It's a guy named Ryan Burke. And if you watch a lot of sports on TV, you've probably seen him on the ads, you know. And so very good cider maker. And he does, you know, but I mean, he presides over, you know, a lot of the mass market cider. I mean, they do make a lot of you know, kind of interesting experiments at Angry Orchard, and you can get them when you go there. They're hard to find otherwise. You see them on certain restaurant menus or something. And so, I mean, it's very similar to, I'm sure, big wineries in Napa that have their mass market brand. And then, of course, they can make very good single vineyard sort of offerings. So it's no different than that.
15 million cases.
Yes.
Angry Orchard.
I mean, exactly.
All right.
And then you have Andy Brennan down the road, who is the cider maker for, he has his own brand. It's just he and his wife. I mean, they make their own brand, Aaron Burr. And it's a very small amount of orchards, but he's basically a forager. He goes out and finds wild apples and makes what he calls locational ciders, because he thinks the word terroir is very pretentious. So we'll go with locational. So he'll say, you know, something from Sullivan County in the Catskills or some area of the Hudson Valley or whatever. And these ciders are all wild fermented. They're, you know, wild apples. And these are very funky, very unique, adventurous ciders. And you might see these on a menu in New York for, you know, $50, $60, $80 a bottle. I mean, this is serious cider. So these are two different models here. You know, this is kind of, I would say those are the two extremes. I mean, and Andy Brennan is like, he really fancies himself a Johnny Appleseed kind of character. He's out there. He makes a distinction, as you said, between wild apples and feral apples, which would have been abandoned orchards, you know, that have gone feral. And he's very much about his relationship with the trees and, you know, come what may, if he has to get poison ivy in order to, you know, harvest a tree, so be it. He'll get the poison ivy. And so sometimes he is an architect, artist. And I think that like Aaron Burr, while the cider is very good and interesting, it's sometimes it feels like a extended performance art project, you know.
That's great. It's kind of this schism between modern society and the back to the landers.
Yeah, exactly.
What you refer to, how often, especially at these, I guess, heritage, you would call them cider makers.
Right.
Everybody, they have wool shirts and big beards and, you know, it's kind
of. There's an aesthetic, ponytails.
In chapter four, we meet more characters, and the Gans brothers, the crusty Gans brothers, who use a 1924 cider press.
Yes.
And also we meet another character I want you to talk about, and that's John Reynolds in that chapter. Talk about the Gans brothers first.
Well, the Gans family, right. The Gans brothers have this old-time cider mill up in the Finger Lakes. And there used to be a lot of cider mills in the Finger Lakes. This is one of the few remaining ones. A lot of them went out of business because there was an E. coli scare and they had to get all this pasteurization. But these guys persisted. And so the whole place is run from the power of one tractor that sits in the corner. The tractor's from like the 1940s. Yeah, the whole thing runs on that. And so they've actually had a revival of their business, though, because there's so many cider makers in upstate New York that come and press this. So their business has actually, like, exploded, and the son has had to come from another part of the farm and take over because the two brothers are in, you know, getting older. They're in their 70s. And so I went with a couple of very young winemakers who were there to, you know, to get their – to get their apples pressed by these guys. And they actually like the hard cider, if we want to call it that, the alcoholic cider, because there's not, they don't have to do any of the pasteurization to it. It's not, you know, they don't have to, you know, they just get the raw juice. And then once the fermentation happens, that they're, you know, that takes care of anything that's kind of off in it. But these guys are great. I mean, these, you know, and so they can't even believe, like, you know, they bring these wild apples and these guys are like, oh, I don't know about these apples. They look like freaking cherries, you know, they kind of like. That's
funny. And then this guy, John Reynolds from Black Duck Cidery, who wild fermentations and no sulfites, and he hates the champagne method of ciders. And
right, he's the right. I mean, Black Duck is the perfect because he's like the black sheep of the Finger Lakes cider world. Right, and so he's. Right, he's very Everything, every idea he has is sort of a contrarian, and he's got that's exactly. He loves these Spanish style ciders where there's like just wild, funky fermentation, and you really have to have a taste for that. But I think people do have a taste for that because you have this, you know, a lot of people, a lot of younger drinkers especially like natural wines. They like kind of funky beers, and so I mean, this is right there.
I love
this
the name right of his youngest child, Pippin.
Pippin, yes, named after the apple.
Yeah.
So, and his oldest child is Idun, who's named after the Norse goddess who keeps the apples. So it's very on brand, man.
He is committed. That's so you mentioned in this about non-apple ciders. I guess you wrote an article about fruit ciders.
Fruit ciders, right. And that's, I think, John Reynolds, his thing is the wild pears. His wild Perry, they call pear ciders Perry. His wild Perry is exceptional. And, you know, Perry's a really interesting drink as well. I mean, Perry, so that's something that he's really committed to. But he's a fruit grower that grows all these crazy fruits. Like, he's got black currants in a cider. He has, I think he has cloudberries. He has this erroneous choke cherry that he puts in there. And, you know, he's got all, and I know someone who lives up there who said, oh, yeah, we used to belong to this CSA that John Reynolds did. And we would get all these crazy fruits in there. You know, we didn't know what to do with them. And so, you know, these little things that look like these little ground cherries that look like tomatillos or whatever, you know, and you would get these. He was like, what do you do with these? I don't know. You know, and he throws them in a cider.
You spend a lot of time in New York, and rightfully so. They have more licensed cideries than any state in the Union.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Well, and you seem to have a special love for that Finger Lakes region, which you mentioned before.
Well, I think because that's the one place in the United States where we can say this is a cider region. Like, I mean, it is a wine region. And so I think that the cider makers there have taken their cues from the winemakers, and you have a critical mass of 8 to 10 more growing that are, you know, that really see themselves as a collective wine or collective cider region. And I think that's important. I mean, Vermont, it's sort of like that, but Vermont's a little more diffuse. The cideries are a few hours apart.
So if I wanted to learn about cider making, where would I go? Besides going to work for one of these guys. Is there a course of study?
There is a famous course that a lot of people take. It's at Cornell, you know. And I think you learn what to do and what not to do, I think. You know, and a lot of cider makers around the country take it. And I have a chapter where I profile what it's like in this course. It's a really intensive 5-day course. I mean, Cornell is really positioned itself as like the UC Davis of cider,
we'll take a break at this point. We've got through about five chapters. We have about five, six chapters to go. Jason Wilson's new book, The Cider Revival. We'll make it, I promise. Dispatches from the Orchard, John Ash and Steve Garner. Delighted to have this great conversation and highlight some of America's greatest and most idiosyncratic
This is a
makers.
Travel book also.
Yes,
it, you know, it definitely is a travel book.
You know,
book.
It's one of those things I want to leave tomorrow.
We do. It makes you want to pack up the RV and head out.
Oh, fantastic.
Back after this, it's KSRO, the Good Food Hour.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Cannabis is legal in California and has become the most rigorously tested agricultural product on the planet. Can I Help You?, a cannabis talk show, is brought to you by Mercy Wellness, a leading local cannabis retailer. Joe Sullivan is the leading cannabis expert at Mercy Wellness.
It's taken me years to learn how to find the best products for Mercy customers. I'm dedicated to them and getting only the best I can find. Many of the products I like and that I buy for Mercy customers are created by people who had a powerful need themselves. Maybe a family member or friend had cancer or another illness, and they were compelled to help them, so they develop a product to help. I constantly ask, what do our customers want? And then I go and find the best products on the market.
Tune in to Mercy's Can I Help You? Every other Friday from noon to 12:30 on KSRO. And hear stories from the cannabis frontier.
Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. Years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself.
Enjoy the fall harvest at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. The market has lots of winter vegetables, nuts, cheese, and meat from your favorite farmers and ranchers. The Beet Generation will be barrel roasting Romano beans and peppers. Aroma Floral from Petaluma has beautiful fall, pepper, and lavender wreaths. There are artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, marinades, tea blends, to seafood and pastas. Don't miss Saturday, October 26th, Harvest Festival and Day of the Dead celebration. There are pumpkins and sugar skulls for the kids to decorate and place a photo of your lost loved one at the memorial altar. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market open year-round Saturdays 8:30 till 1 at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
As rebuilding continues to increase in Sonoma County, Golden State Lumber is adapting to serve your needs. Our new Santa Rosa location is now open at 6 a.m., so you can pull in, load up, and get to the job site earlier. We carry building materials and more at our full-service lumber yard, 3610 Copper Hill Lane, south of Airport Boulevard. Golden State Lumber, a family business who understands when you succeed, we succeed.
Every moment is just for you at Graton Resort and Casino. Go all in on exciting gaming action or celebrate and explore 12 great restaurants, 6 bars and lounges, nightly entertainment, and more. It's your moment right in the heart of Sonoma wine country. Staycation in luxury, from our beautiful rooms to our world-class spa and fabulous pool with cabanas. Book your stay today at GratonResortCasino.com. Your moment awaits. See you there.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Temperatures warming up a bit. Today, though, it's 71, 63 along the coast with partly cloudy skies. Mostly clear tonight, low 45, 47 on the shores. Sunday is sunny at 77 degrees, 66 in Bodega Bay. Monday, blue skies up to 86, 71 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO.
John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen today with Jason Wilson, who's visiting us from the East Coast. His new book is The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard, where he uncovers America's most interesting cider makers and gives us an overview of where the industry is heading. Chapter 6, New Hampshire is a state, Vermont is a brand. Well, that's a little dig, isn't it? A slight dig, although you spent a lot of time in Burlington.
I went to college in Vermont. I love Vermont. This is that's in quotes because it's from a cider maker named Steve Wood, who's sort of often seen as the godfather of cider in, you know, at least this cider revival, this cider movement from, you know, 25 or 30 years ago. He began planting his cider apples in the late 1980s.
He has uses a lot of salty language.
Mm. Yes, he does.
but you recommend his cider. Yeah.
Absolutely, and always have. I mean, I've been having his cider since the late 90s, early 2000s, and I've written about his ciders many times. I think he was one of the first that really talked about the different varieties of apples, you know, that he would have a single varietal Kingston Black cider.
What's the name of his cider?
Farnham Hills. I'm sorry, Farnham Hill Ciders. Yeah. Orchard is called Poverty Lane Orchards, and the cider is called Farnham Hill. And they're in Lebanon, New Hampshire. They're in New Hampshire, and so this is him saying this as a little dig at Vermont, because in his opinion, you know, Vermont and New Hampshire always have a little rivalry going. Yeah. So, yeah.
And what about Vermont? There's good ciders there, too?
Vermont's got amazing ciders. Vermont is, you know, I mean, I would say, yeah, some of the best ciders are made in Vermont. You've got producers like Shaxbury, and then you have producers like Eden, Tin Hat, Fable Farm. I mean, there's a lot going on in Vermont. This cider.
You described it as the Napa Valley of ciders.
That's what they want to become. Vermont has this weird thing where it's the Napa Valley of a lot of things.
Like a term that I'd never heard used before seeing your book was ice cider, like ice wine.
Right. And that's Eden, which is up on the border with Quebec. So they're kind of, it's made very much like iced wine. So they're really concentrating the sugar and
the apples are frozen before
ice cider in the United States has to be made. It can only be made in a place like Vermont because it has to actually. It can't be frozen artificially. It has to be left outside. I visited there in the middle of February in the middle of a blizzard, basically, you know, and then we were watching. They were just kind of bringing the frozen cider into bottle. Yeah, the press and bottle. Yeah.
Chapter 7 is the lost orchards. And this is where you come out west. You had a very different approach to your West Coast trip versus your New England.
Yeah, you can tell you're an East Coaster. I'm teasing.
Oh, I have a complete East Coast bias. I'm that guy for sure.
Well, no, it's wonderful that you say I cannot be impartial about this. And you start in Portland, and when you listed all the different ciders that you experienced. Tamarind, lemongrass, coriander. And you said they're available nowhere else in the country.
Yeah. Grapefruit and chili.
Right.
That was a
watermelon, ginger, lime.
Yeah. What about
tangerine, vanilla, sea salt, right?
Peach bourbon, hops and wild chokeberry bitters, passion fruit purple. And you know my favorite, I laughed out loud, chider. and cider.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they are pushing the boundaries. These are very imaginative.
All of these craft brewers who are making beers are doing this. So maybe they took a page from their book.
I think that's exactly it. I think that, you know, you have areas that are, you have ciders that are influenced by wine, like we've been talking about, and then you have ciders that are influenced by craft beer. Mm. And that's just, you know, obviously it's huge in Portland, and that's, I think, where it's at. But also, I think that the apples you get out there, it's not, you don't have the wide diversity of apples. I mean, you have more apples for sure, but maybe not as much diversity of apples in the Pacific Northwest as you do maybe in New England or New York. So
can I ask a really naive question? Can you make good cider from, you know, what you call dessert apples?
I mean, I think you can make solid cider. I've had plenty of cider that's drinkable, nice, you know, maybe pleasant, but I think... I don't think you can make really complex cider from it. Yeah. And I think
it's more one dimensional.
Yeah. I mean, even the U.S. Cider Association of Cider Makers makes the distinction. They have, there's modern cider, which is made with culinary apples, dessert apples. Mm-hmm. And then there's heritage cider, which is all the stuff we've been talking about, the heirloom, the bittersweet, bitter sharp,
So we have in Sonoma County, we're so lucky, we have a cidery, I guess if that's the right word, that you admire a lot.
And very much, a couple of them, but Tilted Shed especially.
And you profile them when you get into California. Before we head to California, talk a little bit about Art and Science Cidery, because I'm a big Quince fan, and I'm so glad you addressed this Quince.
Yes. Cider. Well, Art and Science is in Oregon. It's in the Willamette Valley. It's in this so it's in a wine region, and the couple there that run it, the husband is a winemaker. He works at he makes Pinot Noir at a organic winery, and then his wife goes around and forages or collects pears and apples. And because Oregon is much more of a pear state than an apple state, they have a lot of pear offerings. So they're another one, just like Black Duck, that has an interesting pear. And where Art and Science really gets their fruit from are farmhouses that have planted decorative or ornamental fruit, and they'll go around, and these people, they like the blossoms and everything, but they hate the fruit. And so there's this one scene I have in the book where they want to get this quince, because they make a couple of ciders either with a blend of quince or 100% quince, and this older couple is like, oh, you need to come tomorrow if you want the quince. We don't want the quince rotting on the ground here. You have to come get the quince. And so I came with her, and we picked the quince, and
But you said the cider you tasted, you used the term most otherworldly ciders I've ever tasted.
Absolutely. Art and Science, I mean, if you can find them, they're just wild ciders. I mean, the quince brings this just kind of strange and interesting characteristic to it.
Yeah. You also visit, when you're in Sonoma County, Jack London State Park. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful section, visiting the orchard.
And it was, you mentioned a number of places. One that I didn't know about was Fort Ross.
It
is the home of
There's a lot of there's tons of historic orchards in California. Yeah. And not tons. I mean, there's a handful of historic orchards in California. So what was interesting about Jack London State Park is that, I mean, they've had all kinds of funding issues with Jack London State Park, and they acquired this vast tract of land, and there were old orchards there. It's now kind of gone back to nature, and you're walking up, there's signs for like beware of mountain lions and everything.
Snakes. Yeah,
snakes and everything. Yeah.
We've almost lost them. You mentioned in San Jose, which I guess it was filled with apples of all kinds.
Absolutely.
And now there's just one farm left.
It's on the sign. This is the last orchard.
Before we leave California and head back to New Hampshire and Virginia, you mentioned Filoli. And talk about Filoli. People live their whole lives here and don't even know about it, never visited.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had never been there either. And
it's Woodside.
Yeah, it was in Woodside. And it's run by the National Historic Trust, and it was an old estate, and there's this sort of gentleman's orchard that has all these just hundreds of varieties of fruit that's you can walk through. It's just amazing. I mean, and the apple varieties they have there.
They have 250 varieties of apples.
And then they have made a cider with some of this historic fruit they have there. And the Tilted Shed actually made the fruit, made the cider for them last year.
Cool, right here in Sebastopol.
Perfect.
We'll be back with the final 10-11 minutes with Jason, and we're going to get through chapters 8 and to chapter 13. One of you will win an autographed copy of this book at the end of the show. Jason Wilson, The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
Traffic on the fives, weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
He pulls up his little chair to the sink in the morning to watch his dad shave. He stands on the seat and stares with eyes wide, anticipating the day he'll have his first whiskers. Now, your dad was a traditionalist at first. Lots of thick shaving cream, couple of nicks, and some new words you couldn't tell Mom. Then one day you heard a hum, almost a purring coming from the bathroom. Dad picked up an electric shaver at Hardesty's. Wow, this thing was cool. It had a trimmer and it cleaned itself. Dad went off to work, Mom headed for the store, and you were home alone, trying out Dad's new shaver. Whether you're young or old or any stage in between, Hardesty's has an electric shaver for you.
as a gift, for graduation, or just for a closer shave. And remember, Hardesty's has been repairing shavers since 1924. Hardesty's Homewares. There's no place like home. There's no place like Hardesty's. Hardesty's Homewares. Open Monday through Saturday in Farmers Lane Plaza at the corner of Farmers Lane and Bennett Valley Road in Santa Rosa.
It's paradise.
Paradise Pet Resorts welcomes your furry family members to go to paradise for the day. Try doggy daycare. It helps your dog socialize, learn dog etiquette, and get exercise. There's all-day supervised pup play, indoor and outdoor yards, and webcams so you can check on them from anywhere. Nobody loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resorts.
It's paradise.
Visit Kaiser Permanente's Thrive Lounge at the North Bay Women's Expo Saturday, October 26th from 10 to 4 to learn how you can live your life to the fullest. We know there are many roles women play.
Daughter.
Sister.
Friend.
Mother.
Breadwinner.
Wife.
And homemaker.
So it's important to take care of yourself. Kaiser Permanente can help keep you feeling and looking your best at every age. At the Kaiser Permanente Thrive Lounge, you can get a skin assessment, check out fashion eyewear, and maybe get a mini massage. It's all happening at the North Bay Women's Expo, October 26th from 10 to 4 at the Grayton Casino Ballroom in Rohnert Park. For more info, go to northbaywomensexpo.com. The North Bay Women's Expo is proudly sponsored by Kaiser Permanente.
With Jason Wilson, our final 10, 12 minutes as we blast through his new book, The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard, as you head back to Virginia, which we don't think of as being one of the epicenters of cider production in the United States.
Don't think of it, but it always has been since the time of Thomas Jefferson. Right, yeah.
So that was exciting to read about that. And then chapter 8, you kind of go off into the world of Spanish ciders.
Well, I think the book was mostly focused on American cider, I mean, it would be, you know, you wouldn't get a full picture unless you saw where some of the inspiration came from. And so I think traveling to Spain and to northern Spain and to Normandy were very important. So in Spain, we visit the Basque cider country and Asturias up in the north. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Basque cider country, this town Astigarraga, which is very close to San Sebastian, is sort of like the bullseye of cider in Basque country. And you've got a few dozen cider houses, and the ritual there is amazing. I mean, you go in the wintertime, starts in mid-January through April, and the barrels of cider, these gigantic barrels of cider that, you know, three people could fit inside of, you know, are there. And you go in and they serve you a dinner, and you get a glass, and you kind of get an unlimited pours of cider, and you follow this guy around, and he opens up the barrel and says, "Choach," and the stream of cider comes out, and you have to catch it in a certain way, and then you get a little bit and you gulp it down, and then you move on to the next one. And that's how it happens. And so when you get there in January, probably the cider is still fermenting a little bit, you know, and then people go and taste all through the wintertime. And then in April, you know, they'll bottle up whatever's left.
And you visit a cider maker in the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. that makes a Spanish del cider.
Well, this place is called Ancho. Just like John Reynolds in we were talking about Black Duck is sort of inspired by this Basque Spanish style of cider. Ancho is as well. And I think that's definitely a real, not everybody's influenced by that, but that's one influence, I think, on, you know,
so how does it differ? How would you describe
it? Differs because it's a little more volatile, and that's why you have that they're shooting it out of the barrel into a glass with this long pour. You see sometimes the people with the long pour where they hold it down at their waist and hold the bottle above their head, and it's this, and because they're trying to get a little bit of effervescence to it to sort of open it up, and you drink a little bit at a time, and
constantly.
Yeah, but it's definitely much more. It's much more acidic. You have there's much more kind of funkier, volatile, you know, kind of compounds in it. And so, yeah. I mean, some people love it. Some people, it's just too much for them. Mm-hmm. So some people are very dismissive of it.
The next chapter, I love this. It's a whole, the chapter is called The Winter Meetings, which is all about CiderCon, as you described.
It's CiderCon, right, yeah, where all the cider nerds meet, yeah.
Yeah, which is, there was one little phrase that you use, messy, chaotic, and growing area, which I thought was a wonderful description of what kind of what goes on there.
Exactly, because a lot of the things we've been talking about are like, well, what's, can't you make cider with concentrate? Or,
yeah.
You know, what's
yeah.
with dessert apples? Or we only have dessert apples. Why is our cider bad? We don't have, you know, there's a lot of inside debates going on, within cider itself.
Churning.
There's a lot of, yes, churning debates, arguments, you know, movements, positions, manifestos. I mean, there's sort of, yes, there's a lot going on.
It was a great chapter. And yeah. also the divisiveness about trying to construct a universal dryness scale so the consumer can have some idea yeah. when they pick up a can or
right.
bottle what they're going to get.
Well, it's getting back to what you were talking about in the beginning. It's one of the key issues for cider is you get people saying, I don't like cider. It's sweet. And maybe they've just had one, they've had a mass market one, or they've just happened to have one that was sweet. And I think Riesling has the same problem. Mm-hmm. People don't like Riesling because it's sweet. You know, I've written about that quite a bit. And so, so there's this, so they're following. So what do you do then? Everybody's confused by Riesling. So what do they do? They're going to follow Riesling and have a sweetness scale, just like Riesling does,
yeah.
which will clear everything up, yeah. right? No, but it won't. Yeah.
And we have to, before we close up, we have to, a few more things. The judgment at Grand Rapids, the largest cider judging in the world, which you participated in.
That's right. Yep.
And talk a little bit about that. And also the descriptor mousy, which is a descriptor, a defect in cider, and how you're trained to detect that.
And right. what well, it is.
Well, mouse you get in wine too, right? Yeah. Mouse is, a lot of people dismiss the natural wine. They say, oh, this is mouse, you know. And the thing is, some people physically just can't detect it, you know. And it's this, you get it, it's sort of almost like this bad dog breath sort of thing you get sort of almost after you've, it's reached your palate. It's, you don't, it's not a smell. And so... Because at this, the Grand Rapids cider event, the cider competition, there was a lot of, it wasn't just professional, it was sort of a pro-am, so there was a lot of amateur cider there, and they were saying, you know, we can't have any cider with mouse, like cannot win a medal, you know,
right.
It's like 80% of the ciders at this thing get a medal. It's sort of like, you know, yeah. kids soccer or something, but like they can't give one with mouse medal.
Right.
And so then we were put through this whole mouse training.
How to detect it.
Yeah. But I think then what that just does to the judges is people go off kind of half-cocked. Like they don't really know what mouse is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
it's sort of, maybe they don't even detect it.
But I never heard of this using baking soda.
Yeah, to sort of
educate your palate.
Exactly, to kind of wash the kid, to give yourself a sort of to change the pH in your mouth, so you can taste.
But
it.
it's related to Brettanomyces, isn't it? This mousy, you said that's kind of a lactic Brett.
Yeah,
kind
exactly.
Of
right.
Combination.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is in winemaking, of course, is a big flaw. But
of course.
But in cider,
not a little bit of Brett.
We see where his butt is.
Yeah.
I don't want to wade into these kind of things. But yeah,
it was really great. That's a chapter in itself that should be a magazine article.
Yeah.
You could sell that alone.
And you had a little chapter on, which is a great love of mine, is apple brandy.
Calvados is a great love of mine too.
And it's so delicious. And again, it's kind of an unknown thing. Everybody knows about cognac and Armagnac, but Calvados, every bit as good, if not better.
And every Calvados maker makes cider. Mm. I mean, they have to make cider in order to distill it. And so, a lot of the great Norman ciders that we know are from Calvados makers.
That was a great chapter also. Then we get down to the final chapter, Selling the Revival, chapter 12. And talk about the final cider you tasted for the book. It was Stone Fence Farm in the Finger Lakes.
Right. So Stone Fence Farm is a cider that's made by South Hill Cider, which is near Ithaca at the southern end of this kind of cider region I'm talking about. And a cider maker named Steve Seelen makes it. But Steve... he's still kind of developing his orchard, so he sources apples from his neighbors and everything. So one of his neighbors is this very interesting guy named Peter Hoover, who had really spent his young years going all around the South kind of saving, you know, these traditional music, like traditional banjo and fiddle music. And so, but he has an orchard in the Finger Lakes now. He's older, and so South Hill takes its apples from this single orchard. It's a single orchard site. So Peter Hoover's kind of a character. He's this older man, but he's got a long white beard and he's bald, but he has a tattoo of this face of a green man on the back of his head. So he's like he's sort of an interesting character.
Would you read the, which is such a great summary to sure. the book, that last paragraph?
Yes. Sitting here drinking Stone Fence Farm, it struck me again. Cider was nothing new. Cider is not a fad that will have its moment. Cider is as old as history, but cider is also fragile. Cider is like that old fiddle and banjo music. Cider is complicated and confounding, and if you've never experienced before, perhaps a little strange. Cider needs people who care deeply about how it's made and why. Cider needs you.
Fantastic.
Would you please give us your favorite number between 1 and 12?
9.
Caller number 9 at 6.
That's that
ding,
one.
Ding,
okay.
Ding, ding, ding. Caller number 9 at 636-1350 win an autographed copy of Jason Wilson's The Cider Revival, Dispatches from the Orchard. You really must read this book. I was just swept along.
Well, and again, you include book. In there also cideries that are notable.
The resources.
And places to go. And I tell you, you should organize a travel company and just take people around.
Take people. Cider tours, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for visiting Santa Rosa. This
Thanks
was
for
great.
Having me. Yeah, that's great.
It really opened my eyes to the world of cider because, you know, living here in Sonoma County, you're kind of insulated. You only see the ones that are produced in Mendocino and Sonoma, and you forget there's an epicenter up in New England and the Finger Lakes. It's worth visiting.
Yes, thanks again. Worth visiting.
Chef John Ash, we'll see you next Saturday.
Yes. Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. This is Steve Garner. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour.